You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. I'm joined today by a special guest, the founder of Denver Stiffs. Way back, it's been 10 years. Isn't that wild?
It's been 11.
11 years.
I started it in February of 2008, if memory serves.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
So the voice you are hearing is Andy Feinstein. Again, the Big Stiff himself. I think the title Big Stiff, we don't have an editor-in-chief. We don't have a site manager. We just have a Big Stiff. It was you for a lot of years. Now it's me. It was Doug Moe. Was he the original Big Stiff?
Of course. I mean, Doug Moe coined the phrase. Right. And everything we do at Denver Stiffs and everything you guys do, and you guys deserve a tremendous amount of credit for where the site has gone. And I know we'll talk about that in a moment. But it all ties into Doug Moe. It all ties into this term of endearment, as Dave Krieger taught me, which is calling each other Stiffs or Big Stiffs. And thank you for the homage. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Doug Moe, I think, embodies the Denver Nuggets. Like, he's just so quirky. And I feel like, here's the thing I always tell people. The Denver Nuggets, it's going to be really hard to win a championship. They can do everything right for a decade and still fall short of it. Doug Moe, I think, is sort of a great example of sort of the other side of basketball. Like, we love Doug Moe. He didn't win. He didn't make the finals. He was unique. He was a one of a kind. And I think that's part of when you like the Nuggets, you're like, you know what? This is like almost a hipster team. They're cool.
They are cool, and they're ironically cool, if that
yes,
makes sense.
Exactly.
And it all goes back to Doug Moe. What we love about Doug Moe is Doug Moe didn't take himself seriously.
Right.
And he knew that at the end of the day, this is a game. And we're here to be entertained. We're here to have fun. And we need not take ourselves too seriously. And, you know, my all-time favorite Doug Moe quote, and there are so many, but my all-time favorite is when the Nuggets are the eighth seed. They had a lot of injuries. This is 1987. And they're going up against the Lakers, who are the one seed. And the Lakers had kicked the Nuggets' butts in 1985 in the conference finals. And the Lakers were heavily favored to win the championship that year. And, of course, they did. And someone in the media asked Doug Moe, you know, what are the Nuggets' chances against the Lakers? And he basically said, who are you kidding? We ain't got no chance against the Lakers. And that was his dig, actually, at Pat Riley. Because Pat Riley took himself so seriously,
right,
with the perfectly coiffed hair,
right,
and the suits and the ties and the shiny shoes. And that really, really pissed Pat Riley off. And so I love that Doug Moe quote. And unfortunately, we've always been a franchise that's been in the shadows of the other franchises.
Right.
We'll talk about that in a moment, too. And that's part of my theory on why I think we actually have the best fans in the NBA.
I am so ready for this take.
And we could dive into that
into it, because I'm so excited for this.
Well, we have the best fans. I mean, think about it. We don't win anything.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this, knowing I was coming on the show with you today. If you look at the three times the Nuggets went to a conference finals, 1977, 1985, and 2009, if you think about it, looking back in time, we had no chance in even those conference finals.
Right.
So the Nuggets have really never had any chance to win.
I want to say, by the way, I saw an interview with Fat Lever where Vic Lombardi was saying, you know, if you didn't get hurt, I think you guys beat the Lakers. And Fat looks at him and goes, yeah, maybe.
That's awesome. And again, back to Doug Moe's quote, we ain't got no chance to beat the Lakers. I think I wrote that in 2009 when we went to the conference finals against the Lakers. I didn't even think we had a chance that year. And we always blame something, right? It's Alex English's wrist. It's David Thompson's cocaine. It's George Karl's stupid inbound pass play.
Oh,
it's,
God.
You know, pick your culprit. But at the end of the day, you know, we've never really had a chance. And that'll dovetail into talking about this team this season. But that's why we're true fans, because
right,
we stand by this team. You know, I never defected and became a Lakers fan like my brother did in the 80s.
That happened?
Oh, yeah, I can tell you that story.
Oh, no.
I never defected and became a Bulls fan just because Michael Jordan was really cool. I never defected and became a Celtics fan because Larry Bird was really cool. And God damn it, there's no way I'm going to defect and root for this Warriors team that I despise.
Right.
So anyway, we are
it
true
takes
fans.
A special type.
And not only that, there's another subtlety of being a Nuggets fan. We're not even close to being the most popular team in our own market.
Right.
We have to beg for coverage. When the Broncos play like crap, which they have lately, they still get more press.
Right.
I mean, this town, from a sports media perspective, is obsessed with like who our quarterback's coach is.
Right.
Never mind the team that's on pace to win 60 games over here for the first time in NBA franchise history. So there's my rant. But we are the best fans in the country, in the NBA universe. And you and the writers of Denver Stiff and the contributors have done a great job of cultivating that fan culture.
And I think, and this is something I've talked about a lot on the show, of if you're going to be a Nuggets fan, a lot of people will write me and say, I want to be a Nuggets fan, fill me in on what it means. I say, just know, going in, it's pure misery. Right. I mean, you have to enjoy the subtleties of the fan experience, maybe not the big one. And this is what bothers me so much about Lakers fans. There's so many of them want to, you know, 17 championships. Oh, yeah, we're counting the 50s, the 60s, 70s. Wow. You're talking 3 decades before you were there, before you were even in Los Angeles.
Sure.
All this stuff. And then, you know, I see Lakers fans all the time say, you guys have no idea what we've been through the last 5 years. What are you talking about? The last 5 years?
Yeah, poor you. You know, so it's a true story. Denver Stiffs was started while I was living more in Los Angeles than I was in Denver. I was actually going back and forth. I was kind of phasing out of a career in the entertainment business and moving into a career here in Denver, which has been a combination of hospitality and real estate development. And so I was literally in enemy territory from 1998 to 2008. I lived in Los Angeles, and I had a front row seat to the Kobe Shaq era and what the media was like there and the hype. And it was actually kind of fun being a Nuggets fan, being ensconced in enemy territory for that decade.
Nothing will make you hate the Lakers more than meeting Lakers fans. That's they have no spine, and that's what I said. But, you know, this is a recurring theme, so we'll move on. You did spend, I think, 8 years writing for Denver Stiffs.
Yeah.
I mean, you spent a lot of years doing that. You don't anymore. What was that transition? Was there a motivation for you to stop writing?
Yeah, it's a combination of a lot of factors. But back to what I said earlier, we have the best fans in the basketball universe, and they deserve someone like yourself, frankly, and these other terrific writers you've brought on board, whether it's Gordon or Brendan, or Mike, my man, Mike Olson. I love you, brother. I miss
you. I think he's the most creative sports writer ever.
Oh, yeah. Daniel. I mean, you put this great team together, and the Denver Nuggets and the Denver Stiffs community deserves people that are devoted to this almost full time.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't do that anymore. And I, you know, I can't speak for Nate. I can't speak for Jeff. You know, I think the three of us certainly, I thought, did a great job of elevating this site to a certain level.
Yeah, no
but
doubt.
There's another level that you guys have been able to take it. And that just doesn't happen unless it's a full-time commitment. And knowing I couldn't do that and service the fans, and maybe I should even take a step back. The reason I started Denver Stiffs in the first place was because it was an undercovered team.
Right.
You know, believe it or not, we had a Rocky Mountain News back in the day when I started it. But the two papers here did not cover the team.
Right.
They were never talked about on talk radio. And so I thought I filled that gap. But it was a full-time job. I mean, I used to do the pre-games. I used to do the recaps. I used to do the editorials. I did it all by myself. And then, you know, we teamed up with Nate and we did it all by ourselves. And then Jeff, and we were a three-man operation. It's a lot of work. And so to give the fans what they deserve, we really had to hand it off to people that want to do this full time, that can do this full time. And I've been very fortunate. My business has grown in my private life. The listeners may not know this, but I'm the chairman of the Rhino Art District here in Denver, which has done very well. And I also run the Exto Event Center, the Trax Nightclub, and do some real estate projects. And I now have a wife.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, I have a beautiful, beautiful wife. I have a beautiful baby girl that came 5 weeks ago. And, you know, priorities change. And I just can't do it full time. But I love you guys. I love what you've done. I'm rooting for you. And I'm amazed at where the site has gone and how big the audience has gotten. You deserve, my friend, a lot of congratulations for that.
Well, I appreciate it. How do you feel the Denver media market has changed with regards to covering the Nuggets? Because now there's a lot of blogs covering the Nuggets. What do you think of just the media landscape now with regards to sports?
Well, you know, you and I talked about this, I think, a couple of weeks ago. I believe in the more the merrier strategy. I believe that a rising tide raises all boats. I mean, I'm certainly biased towards Denver Stiffs. I think that we have the best, or actually you guys have the best coverage of anyone, the best access, the best angles. But what's great about this new media, where anyone can start a website, anyone can start a podcast, I think it's great to have a lot of voices and a lot of people following the Nuggets. Moreover, as you said, the Nuggets are kind of the hipster team, I think you said.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we're definitely a millennial team. And, you know, millennials and young people, especially those who live in the Rhino Art District, where I now live and work, really follow their media through avenues like podcasts and blogs and Twitter and other media. So I think it's great that the team is getting so much coverage. I love the way, I'm not sure who does the Denver Stiffs Twitter handle, but I love the animated GIFs. I love the quirky jokes. It makes it a lot of fun. So, it's been fun to watch.
It's supposed to be fun. It's funny you mentioned the millennial thing because Denver is a millennial city. I mean, there's a lot of transplants in their 20s and early 30s coming to sort of see what it's all about. But you know what's interesting about Denver Stiffs and Locked On Nuggets in particular? The readership is so much more diverse than I would have guessed. And I meet people at Pepsi Center all the time. It's certainly more 30 and 40-year-olds, you know, 20, 30, 40-year-olds. But I meet people I've met people this season, 80 years old, listen to the podcast every day. And
that's great.
My grandpa doesn't even know how to use it, you know. Yeah. So this is amazing that it's connecting with so many people. And I actually, we at Denver Stiffs love to beat up on the traditional media markets that don't serve the Denver Nuggets community, but secretly we like it.
Well, when I started Denver Stiffs, it was disruptive.
Right? Yeah.
And now disruptive is a positive word. Back when I did it was kind of a negative word. But I got to give the quote, end quote, traditional folks in media a lot of credit. Sure. Sandy Clough, Mark Kisley, even though Mark and I kind of went head to head from time to time on a few issues. But
you don't say.
Dave Krieger, Les Shapiro, Woody Page. I mean, these are old school guys that I grew up listening to and reading and following, and they had my back.
Right.
And they thought it was great that somebody was being disruptive and somebody was out there really pushing the envelope. And among those guys, like I said, all those guys were just really wonderfully supportive of us, of me and us. And I think they are still of you guys today. So let's give the old school media guys credit for not, you know, for not having the fear of what comes from a disruptive media format.
Let's take a quick break, but when we get back, I want to talk about this Golden State Warriors team, because every time I say the word Warriors, Andrew's face turns green with disgust. So let's take a break. We'll be right back. Right here with the big stiff himself, Andrew Feinstein. Let's talk about this Golden State Warriors team, because, look, I've been not disgusted. My perspective on this Warriors team was that 2015 through 2016, the 2 years, were just absolutely incredible and, to me, like the pinnacle of what you want sports to be. The Warriors were the Denver Nuggets before, you know, they were no different than the Denver Nuggets. Lovable losers. They get this lightning in a bottle with the team that they had assembled, and it was incredible. Then they had Kevin Durant, and now they're the most annoying team I've ever had to like suffer through. What's your take on the Warriors, the four eras, or do you separate it into two kind of separate eras?
Well, I agree with everything you just said, and I wrote a lot about this as I was kind of wrapping up my writing career at Denver Stiffs. Just like you said, I was really proud of the Warriors. I mean, it sucked that they upset the Nuggets in 2013, but they did it the right way, right? I mean, you draft Stephen Curry at 7, you draft Klay Thompson at 11, you draft Draymond in the second round. They even whiffed on a pick between Curry and Klay Thompson, the name escapes me, but is it Ikma Udo, I think? They literally whiffed the pick in the middle. They're just kind of like the Nuggets did with Moutier. So the Warriors, and I wrote about this, the Warriors were a model for a perennially losing franchise without getting a first overall pick,
right,
rebuilding and becoming a championship team. And for Steve Kerr to take them to 73 wins without a big free agent signing, Iguodala doesn't count, without a big free agent signing, with nothing but home.
He counts because that's the level of free agent signing that's like, oh, that's acceptable.
Fine. Quality role player.
Yeah, exactly.
But he wasn't a top 3 player. He wasn't even a top 30 player.
Right.
So good for the Warriors, and I actually rooted for them when they won 73 games.
I think a lot of people did.
I loved it. And then because of an anomaly in the salary cap where the cap jumped $20 million in one summer, they were able to backdoor into Kevin Durant.
Well, let me just say one other thing about this Warriors team that you're leaving out. They revolutionized the game, which I think is a mark of another, like, these historic teams, is they did something that brought something new to the table. And the Warriors and Steph Curry and the way they shoot, it used to be you can't win with a jump shooting team. You can't win with these tiny little guys in the perimeter, and they changed that. And to me, and by the way, 2016 was one of the most fun regular seasons ever because this team was so dominant in a way that we had never seen before. So,
no question. And I agree with all of that. And I rooted for the Warriors. I know everyone thinks I'm a Warriors hater now, but I rooted
for
them.
But I'm trying to tie that to the Denver Nuggets team because the point I'm trying to make is that team before the Kevin Durant era, they were fun, they were unique, they were iconic, they were all of these cool qualities.
Fair enough, and agreed. Although I don't think that, unfortunately, as much as I enjoy watching him play, I don't think Jamal Murray is the second coming of Steph Curry.
Right.
I don't know how many times.
I think that's clear.
I don't know how many nights Steph Curry went 3 of 14 shooting, but yeah. I'm sure if we look back, we'll find that he was inconsistent at that time in his career as well. But anyway, the Kevin Durant signing, let me just give a couple caveats here. First of all, I'm a capitalist, all right? If Kevin Durant wants to make that decision, if that's where he wants to go for employment, and if the Warriors want to hire him for employment, they are welcome to do so. They didn't break any rules. It is what it is, okay? Now, but me as a fan, right. I don't have to like it. I don't have to appreciate it. And I will
and
tell you.
And you can be vocal about saying how lame it is.
It's
which
lame.
It is.
And Kevin Durant's two championships in 2017 and 2018, hands down, in my opinion, are the two most hollow championships in the history of stars in the NBA. I think LeBron's championships with the Heat were semi-hollow. But there's nothing as, but you know, in LeBron's defense, he joined a 47-win Heat team.
Right.
Kevin Durant literally joined a 73-win team, which means that unless you go 82-0 and sweep every single round of the playoffs, you're a failure.
Right.
I mean, it's absurd what Durant decided to do. You know, in my opinion, and I don't care if he hears this, that's not a champion.
Yeah.
That's not a champion. And you know, I know it's unfortunate that Charles Barkley and Karl Malone and Dominique Wilkins, you know, and Alex English, some of my favorite players from the 80s and 90s, never won a championship. But you know what? They never colluded with anyone either, you know? And I just think, I mean, Karl Malone tried to gravy train on the 2004 Lakers,
right.
And thank God they didn't win. But you know, these are hollow championships, and I hope subtly Durant's hearing a lot of this.
Oh,
and,
I think
and goes
he's
to New
very
York.
Loudly hearing yeah. it. I mean, you think about Kevin Durant since he joined the Warriors, burner accounts, you know, getting into very open now beefs with the media. And it's funny because I think he's such an interesting case study, just like when we look play pop psychologists and look at star athletes. Because everything I see and read and hear from him, it makes me think he knows. He knows. And rather than kind of be like, okay, I'm just going to win these championships and move on, he keeps doubling down with, oh, you guys are mad. You guys are mad. Like it's some kind of cool thing. And it's like, no, nobody really can appreciate what you've done because it was so it was so obviously easy.
You know, I will tell you, I remember watching, I think it was the 20, to show you how disgusted I was by this, I never missed an NBA Finals game in my life. Not a series, a game.
Wow.
When I went to college in Denmark, when I was in for a semester, my father mailed me recorded VHS cassettes of the NBA Finals at that time between the Bulls.
Which is both a cool story and also dating yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Between the Bulls and the Jazz so that I wouldn't miss those games. All right. I didn't give a shit, pardon my language, about watching the last two NBA Finals. They were an absolute goddamn joke. And the NBA really screwed the Cavs with that stupid blocking foul in game one of last year's finals where there was a shot, an outside shot, at that being a competitive finals.
Yeah.
So anyway, these are hollow championships. It has actually affected my fandom
yeah.
as a fan adversely. And I can't wait for this to be over because it's almost like they can get asterisks because these are hollow championships.
So you talk about being a capitalist and your four-player agency and being able to do this. Where does this Anthony Davis stuff fall on that spectrum?
Well, first things first, you got to blame the Pelicans.
Right.
You know, they made a couple stupid decisions. They did exactly the same thing. Well, not exactly, but similar to what the Cavaliers did with LeBron's first time around. And what happens is when teams get a superstar like that, their temptation is to forego their future for
right.
their present by putting like decent role players, marginal all-stars around them, doesn't work. And then what happens is it puts a lot of pressure on that superstar to carry that cast. They get physically and mentally worn out. And unless it works, they want to leave.
Right.
That's what happened with LeBron in Cleveland. That's what's happening with Anthony Davis. Back to the Warriors, give them credit. Curry won 1 year. Then Thompson. Right. Then Green. Give the Seattle Supersonics, Oklahoma City Thunder credit. Durant, Westbrook, Harden. They didn't like get rid of those picks that became Westbrook and Harden just because they happened to have Durant. So the Pelicans deserve a lot of blame here. You know, it's very similar to Carmelo's situation in Denver, unfortunately. And I think that had the Nuggets won a championship or even been to a championship, Melo probably stays. But same thing with New Orleans. And I you know, the Pelicans, They didn't put it together. And Anthony Davis, you know, you only live once, and right. he has every right to go, or at least to try to go somewhere else.
I think most people are cool with the idea that Anthony Davis wants to be in position to compete and win and all those things. What I think most people are going to find frustrating is that he is going, I think, successfully to force his way to Los Angeles. And,
yeah.
And here's the thing about the NBA, and I'm curious, you're a capitalist. The Lakers have the strongest brand.
Yeah.
They've earned that in some ways, although I think the league, which is supposed to, I think, help, you know, not create fairness, but to at least, like, provide opportunities, I think the league has enabled the Lakers to become this juggernaut that's too big to fail. So my question is, Anthony Davis isn't going to the Lakers because he really likes the supporting cast. He just knows LeBron James, Anthony Davis, the rest doesn't matter, it'll fall into place. Do you think that it's too far? I know you can't erase the advantage the Lakers are always going to have, but do you think it's just too stacked right now with the way players can use their free agency, too stacked in their favor and against the favor of teams like Denver, Milwaukee, New Orleans, and the like?
Well, this isn't a new story, unfortunately. I mean, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did this to the Milwaukee Bucks in the early 70s. He didn't like being in Milwaukee, and he forced his way to the Lakers. Shaquille O'Neal wasn't happy in Orlando and forced his way to the Lakers. Okay?
Right. And I love how these stories...
And Dwight Howard, that loser, okay, wasn't happy in his situation in Orlando and forced his way to the Lakers. So there's a long history of star, especially centers, for whatever reason, forcing their way to the Lakers. You know, I hate the Lakers too. I mean, my brother's a Benedict Arnold. He turned on me in the 80s and became a Magic Johnson fan. And to this day, I guess to his credit, here we are 40 years later, he's still a Lakers fan. But they are the glamour franchise. And for reasons that I think are justified and some that perhaps aren't, you know, there's only one Los Angeles, there's only one New York.
Right, right.
You know, if I would hope that Anthony Davis would maybe offer his current team a suite of teams that he would go to.
Right.
And you'd think that if LeBron was in Cleveland still, maybe that would be a potential location. But, you know, the combination of the Lakers and LeBron, it's almost too tempting to build another dynasty there. And, you know, I have mixed feelings about it. Of course, I'm an old school guy. I mean, I remember when, you know, back to the players I mentioned earlier, Alex English never tried to move out of Denver.
Right.
He didn't leave Denver until we screwed him with a stupid trade in 1989.
Right.
You know, Dominique Wilkins didn't want to leave the Hawks. They screwed him in 1995 by trading him to the 1994. Sorry, for trading him to the Clippers. You know, Reggie Miller stayed with the Pacers his whole career. You know, I'm an old school guy, and I think these guys should stay with the teams that draft them. And
it's if they're put in position to succeed.
And it's not like the Pelicans have been a total disaster. I mean, they've been a playoff
team. I think the
team,
Pelicans are below the threshold.
Well, fair enough. And that's what I'm saying. The Pelicans, this is on them, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, look, in his defense, he has said all the right things. He has done all the right things. And they have not put a good team around him.
Here's the thing. Denver has, you think about all of the things that have broken their way. A 16th pick and a 19th pick working out, a 41st pick working out. You know, they just haven't, they've really had to hit on so many things and gotten lucky so many times / done a good job with the hand they were dealt. You look at the Lakers, they had three consecutive number two picks, two of which left for nothing. D'Angelo Russell, they got tax relief.
Who's actually turned out to be a decent
player.
Be
okay. Julius Randle, who they just said, you know what, we'll let you walk.
Yeah.
Now they have Lonzo Ball, who is one of four pieces they're willing to part with.
Yeah.
They've done nothing to build this team, but they're going to end up with two of the top five best players. And look, I understand this idea, but my whole point is Denver has done as good of a job as you can possibly imagine given the hand they were dealt. Maybe 95% as well as what you can imagine. The Lakers have done absolutely nothing right, and they're... Who would you bet on right now?
Of course. No, I have no good answer for you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But, you know, all I can say is the Knicks still suck, so there is some balance out there as far as marquee franchises.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Boston with Danny Ainge. That's a glamour franchise, but he's really done well. I mean, he's drafted well. He's traded well. He's picked up Bill Belichick's playbook of cutting your dead weight before their really expensive dead weight.
Yeah.
And but you're right. The Lakers seem to just get whoever the hell they want when they want to. I remember living in L.A. when they got Gary Payton and Karl Malone, and I thought, this is just not fair. But then Kobe had a tough summer in Colorado, and the team fell apart. But
so you think this is a story as old as time for the NBA?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I think it was 1973, 74, forced his way to the Lakers. So the Lakers were all – the combination of Los Angeles as a market, the Lakers, I mean, look, they're the New York Yankees of the NBA. They are.
Are you optimistic about this Denver Nuggets team's ability to... I mean, here's the thing I like about them. They're very Denver. We talked about Doug Moe being very Denver. This is a team of overlooked guys, likable guys, quiet, shy almost. They play the underdog role, I think, really, really well. I liked that when it was just a regular NBA. With an Anthony Davis, LeBron James NBA, it's like, okay... We're not just—it's not David versus Goliath. It's David versus three Goliaths. Or
we're definitely, we are definitely the bulwark against what the Warriors have done with Durant, what the Lakers are about to do with Anthony Davis. It's funny though. I hate the Lakers. I hate the Lakers. But of all LeBron James's moves, before I answer your question about the Nuggets, of all LeBron's moves, just from a basketball standpoint, I actually appreciate this one the most because I thought this was his greatest challenge. Mm. I mean, going back to Cleveland, it was still a big three situation. With Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. He had the big three situation in Miami. This was a tough basketball move. I mean, this is actually on our stiff list for today.
Yeah.
This Lakers team is garbage without LeBron.
Yeah.
Absolutely garbage.
Yeah, let's roast them later.
So I think that from the Nuggets, yes, it would be fun to have a team of no names. I hate to say that, guys. Don't listen to that part. But you know what I mean? On a national scale,
sure.
A team of no names. As a counterpuncher to what the Lakers are going to be doing with if they get Anthony Davis, to the Warriors have already done, and of course the Rockets as well, and the Oklahoma City Thunder. It's good to see that the Nuggets are a counterpuncher for all that.
It's kind of like the Super Bowl. The Rams are, look, I'm not trying to make this a white hat, black hat, especially there's plenty to not like about the LA Rams, but you know, they are that's what team they are. They've gone every single step along the way, and now they're up against the evil
empire. Can I give a quick comment about the Rams?
Sure.
So all these Saints fans are squealing, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
About how they got screwed on the non-pass interference
sneaky
call.
One of the more annoying fan bases
out
there.
Let me just tell you something, Saints fans, okay? When you rest your starters in week 17 and you screw your fans by resting your starters, and then you get the bye week of 18,
you have the
first round of the playoffs in week 19. You're basically taking 3 weeks off. And this is what cost the Denver Broncos a playoff victory in 1996. This is what cost Peyton Manning's Colts from going further all those years with Tony Dungy and then Jim Caldwell. You can't sit your players.
Yeah.
And what happens when you sit your players and you get rusty, you get close games. And when you get close games, you leave yourself open to bad inbounds passes,
bad calls
from the refs. Yeah. And you know what? If you can't bitch about a bad call, because if you had played the game right in the first place, you wouldn't have been in that situation.
Yeah.
So I have no sympathy for Saints fans.
That was an all-time rant.
Yeah.
I don't even remember where I was. Oh, no, but so Denver. If Denver and the Lakers meet in the Western Conference Finals, maybe not this year, but in a year's time or so, it'll be one of those things where all Lakers fans will be rooting for the Lakers, obviously. Everybody else in the world will be like, you know what? You don't think so?
No, you know what? Unfortunately, and I'll be rooting for the Nuggets, but you know, people like dynasties. They like superstars, and even though everyone hated Kobe Bryant, they loved seeing Kobe Bryant get to the finals.
Mm, okay.
The only player I could think of that everyone rooted for, even though he was the favorite, was Jordan. Everyone kind of rooted for Jordan.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Whereas everyone kind of rooted against Kobe, but liked seeing him get to the finals.
To see the greatness.
Everyone wanted to see LeBron fail with the Heat, but at the end of the day, they want him to get to the finals.
I think, 2011 Mavs, I think, is a good, like, you know,
oh,
what
I
you
love that.
Hopeful,
yeah, yeah.
A hopeful doppelganger.
So my fear of the Nuggets, and I love this team, is my fear is we're going to be somewhat similar to the Hawks, Atlanta Hawks of 3 or 4 years ago. You know, a team that can literally win, or even the Raptors recently, like a team that can win 50 to 60 games, but at the end of the day, like because we don't have our Anthony Davis, we don't have our LeBron, we don't have our Curry, we don't have our Harden, we don't have our Westbrook, we don't have our Paul George, need I go on, I don't know how we get to a championship.
Well, I think they might have a player that is better than at least some of the guys that you just mentioned.
I know who you're talking
about.
Yes.
Let's talk about top five sports hatreds, because it's, I think there's a catharsis in talking about the teams you hate, you despise the most. Who are the teams that make that list for you? It didn't have to be teams. It could be players that you just enjoy hating.
Well, we'll wait for when we get to the stiff list. Carmelo Anthony's always going to be kind of enemy number one on a lot of my lists.
Go into that, because a lot of maybe some of the newer listeners and newer fans don't – there's mixed reports. I don't really feel that much animosity towards Carmelo.
Well, let's first give Carmelo credit where credit is due on two fronts. One is when he got to Denver, they made the playoffs every single year. They hadn't made the playoffs for, I think, 8 years, and then he gets here and they make the playoffs for, well, with him, and then with the trade post Carmelo, I think they made the playoffs 9 consecutive times, something like that.
Yeah.
Great run for the Nuggets, and that doesn't happen without Carmelo. And number two, even though Carmelo didn't want to be here anymore, he did give management the opportunity to trade him.
Right.
You know, he could have really screwed us and waited till the summer and just left as a free agent. He did give us the opportunity to trade him. The problem is he only gave Masai Ujiri, the GM at the time, 2 places he wanted to go.
Right, yeah.
You know, either Brooklyn or New York. My issue with Carmelo is multi-level. One is, I'll never forget this. I went to a charity event that he was the host of when I think it was back in 2008, 2009. I had just started the website, and he never showed up.
Oh, my.
I think standing up your own charity event is pretty on the uncool list.
Okay.
And number two, here's a guy that's just blessed with gifts that 99.999% of anyone who will ever touch a basketball will never get. And he just didn't take advantage of those gifts.
Yeah.
He was much more concerned about his stat sheet than his team. And he could have taken us a lot further. And I guess at the end of the day, even though I give him credit for giving us the opportunity to trade him, he didn't want to be here.
Yeah.
And I wrote an open letter to him. I wrote a Christmas parable about the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future of the world he's going to walk into in New York. Which, and I called it.
Well, you
I
were just going to say you were right about it.
And
do you think he has
I'm
any
a Nuggets
regrets?
Fan. Why would I like a guy who doesn't want to be here? Seriously, think about it. Why would you want to be like a guy that doesn't want to be here? You know?
Yeah. For me, it's just it's along the lines of the Pelicans thing. And I think Denver was in much better position.
No, but
than
Denver
the
did a good
are,
job.
Right. I understand.
He went to a conference finals. And if George Karl doesn't get sick, the Nuggets probably go to back-to-back conference finals.
Yeah.
You know, Adrian Dantley, I think I put him in my Hall of Fame of all-time worst interim coaches in Nuggets history.
He struggled.
Yeah, along with Mike Evans, and I forget who we got after Brian Shaw got fired. He didn't do a particular
game. Melvin Hunt. He did
Oh, yeah,
two
Melvin Hunt.
Denver was in the tank. They could have, you know, maybe had the fourth pick or something. He won like 7 in a row.
Right.
Come on, man.
So he belongs in the interim Hall of Shame also. Interim coach Hall of Shame. So I just think that Carmelo, does he regret it? I don't think he has the wherewithal to regret it.
Yeah.
I think he thinks about himself a
lot.
And I think he's, unfortunately, he's the poster child for, you know, these kids get worshipped when they're 13, 14 years old, AAU basketball. LeBron seems to have some humility to him. At least he fakes it. But Carmelo didn't really ever seem to have that. And not only is he going to regret it, but he's going to regret a guy named Nikola Jokic wearing number 15, because that's going to be the 15 hung in our rafters. When they retire that number, it will not be Carmelo.
You don't think they'll do both? It'd be corny too, wouldn't it? But
it would be corny, but in Carmelo's defense, he actually deserves it.
He deserves it.
You
There's
know,
no doubt
if,
about
if
it.
If Dikembe Mutombo deserves it for playing here for 5 seasons,
right?
And Fat Lever, which I thought deserved it, he really deserved it. How awkward was that, by the way? They do a Fat Lever painting 1 year, and then they're like, oh shit, the Hawks retired Mutombo's jersey,
right.
So maybe we should.
Yeah,
and then all of a
funny.
Sudden, oh, by the way, Lever played here for 6 or 7 years, so we better do him too.
Oh, God.
That was awkward. But if Lever deserves it and Mutombo deserves it, and that's your standard, Carmelo deserves it.
Yeah, there's no question about it. It will be weird, though. And I do wonder. So here's my thing I think about a lot. If Jokic leaves in 5 years when his contract's up, and he gives Denver 7 or 8 good years, I mean, part of me just thinks, That's your window.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you make it so nice that a player doesn't want to leave, no matter what the maybe he's like, oh, there's a lot of Serbians in Chicago, that'd be fun. You make Denver his home.
Yeah.
And you provide him an opportunity to achieve all of his goals, then he stays.
Yeah.
And so to me.
But Carmelo, we had a great situation here.
Carmelo
left. He was enamored
reasons.
By the lights of New York City, and I think there had something to do with his significant other wanting to be there. And again, I'm a capitalist. Do what you want.
Yeah.
I would hate it if someone said to me, hey, you can only work for me for the rest of your life. That's all you can do. Doesn't mean I have to root for it as a fan, though.
I wonder if, and I don't know that either of these two guys would be honest and reflective enough, but it would be interesting to kind of look back at both Kevin Durant and Carmelo Anthony and say, here's what you get when you leave a good situation. Because Kevin Durant was in a good situation, maybe not great, but a good situation. And he won those championships, but he's sort of become this lesser player in a lot of people's
eyes. Well, my issue with Durant isn't so much that he left. I could see him saying, you know what, kind of a Kobe Shaq situation, this Russell guy.
Yeah.
He's my brother on the court, but ball hog, stat clogger, I want to do it on my own. Fair enough. Going to the Warriors is not doing it on your own. You're gravy training on a 73-win team. Had Durant gone to Boston and played with Al Horford and played with Kyrie, that would have been really interesting to me.
Right.
You know, and I don't think you could have begrudged him for that.
Right.
But I think going to the Warriors is unforgivable.
Yeah. All right, Carmelo is number one on this list. Who else makes your list of hated sports players, fans.
Fans, team. Obviously, I'm with you on the Lakers. I'm a child.
Number one on my list.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I grew up in the 80s, and we lost to the Lakers in the playoffs, I think, three times in the 80s. And then, of course, we lose to them again a couple times in the 2000s. The Lakers have always been standing in the Nuggets' way. And the irony of ironies is this Nuggets team, and give Tim Connelly a world of credit, and Arturis and the team. I love those guys. You know, for putting this team together, they're going to get themselves to a conference finals. And who's going to be there? LeBron and Anthony Davis. And some combination of the refs and the NBA and the scheduling will make sure that the Lakers go to the finals again.
Part of me likes this, though, in this way. Sometimes to do something it's like when the Yankees won, or the Red Sox won their first championship, they had to be down 3-1 against their rival Yankees. It's like sometimes you have to do it the hardest possible way, and it's shaping up for Denver to have to do this the hardest possible way.
I agree it'll be the hardest possible way. It reminds me, I was at the Super Bowl in 2014 in New York, and the Broncos were getting their asses kicked at halftime, and my friend Justin, who I went to the game with, said, well, look at it this way. If the Broncos win, it'll be the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. Of course, that didn't happen. So you're saying the same thing. Look at it this way. If we do it, it'll be done in the hardest possible way. Hated sports teams. Obviously, I hate the Patriots, although I do have a lot of respect for Belichick and Brady.
Losing me. They're on my list, but there's no respect.
I hate the Lakers. I still hate Isaiah Thomas. He was a great...
Really?
You know, to be successful as a blogger, you have to have foils.
Yeah.
And Isaiah was a great, great foil. I mean, here's a guy who bankrupted the CBA in a summer, okay? Here's a guy that torched the Knicks to the ground and had a sexual harassment lawsuit on his way out the door.
Here's a guy who
sent Marty Collins in to clobber J.R. Smith to cause the Madison Square Garden melee. You know, they got all of our players suspended and ruined that season. You know, so I have no love for Isaiah. Isaiah's still on my all-time list of hated guys. Player Isaiah, wow.
You liked him?
Oh, I want him in my foxhole.
Really?
Oh, I want him in my foxhole. Okay. I mean, what he did with Michael Jordan and the Bulls and not shaking their hands in 1990 is unforgivable.
Sore loser,
but,
for sure.
But I want him in my foxhole.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Hated sports. Who are some others on your list?
Red Sox for me are number two, only behind the Lakers. And part of this is they're just like the Yankees, but they play the white hat to the Yankees black hat.
Hey, they've gotten four World Series in the last 15 years. Who knew?
We can end this podcast if you keep bringing this stuff up.
I mean, who knew? baseball's got a problem. You know, the Red Sox have won two out of the last five World Series, I think.
Okay.
I couldn't name a player on the team.
Yeah,
I think Big Poppy was on the last one, not this one.
I can't name
a player. And I'm still a sports fan. I couldn't name a player. Baseball's got a huge, huge star power problem.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you a player on the Dodgers.
You wanted to start juicing again.
No, I didn't like the juicing. Speaking of juicing, we got to talk about NBA offense. But baseball's lost me. I don't know who any of these guys are.
So Blazers are on the last two on my list are more temporary. Like they're just interchangeable. Okay. I enjoy hating the Blazers because of Nurkic. You were gone, I think, by most of this Nurkic stuff. But he was worse than a Carmelo in terms of hurting a team to force his way to where he wanted to be.
Sure.
So I'll always sort of dislike
him. I still thought he was a steal over 16th pick.
Oh, there's no doubt. Yeah. That's what makes it so painful, is he was actually a really good
player. I'll tell you a guy I'm not a fan of is Kenneth Faried.
Yeah?
I was literally in Africa with NBA Basketball Without Borders with Kenneth Faried, and he just wasn't nice. Like, he's just not nice.
That's not surprising.
He was notoriously tough with media, too. Yeah, not a Faried fan.
Let me ask you this one. Nuggets win a championship. Maybe they win two. Does their fan base become awful and insufferable?
Oh, God. You know, I went to college. I'm dating myself. I went to college in 1994. And that spring, the Nuggets upset the Supersonics.
Yeah.
And almost upset the Jazz in the next round.
Right.
And we were the hot young team. It's hard for the young listeners to imagine this, but we were the hot young team. And I remember going to college, and I'm wearing my navy blue and maroon and gold Denver Nuggets t-shirt, shorts, whatever. And I remember kids, I went to college in Atlanta, and I remember kids in college saying to me, oh my God, the Nuggets. Yeah, I'm a fan of them now.
Right, yeah.
And I remember thinking, you know what? I don't want you as a fan. We don't need you, you know? We were just fine without you for the last 20 years. We don't need you, you know? So, you know, take your L with you. Take your W with you. I don't care. I've never been a bandwagon fan.
Yeah.
I've always been a very loyal friend and a very loyal fan. And we don't need you. And, you know, you have the right to root for the Nuggets if you're born here. You have the right to root for the Nuggets if you have a connection to a player and for whatever reason. Like, for example, our site had very high readership when Iverson was here.
Oh, yeah.
But if you stuck to the Nuggets after Iverson left, you're allowed to stay.
Yeah, there's a lot of those.
If you're from Serbia and you didn't even know who the Nuggets were, but because Jokic is here, you're a fan for life. Just like the Rockets have Chinese fans for life because of Yao Ming, you're welcome. You're allowed on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
But I don't want people to root for us just because we won like those insufferable
Bay
Area Warriors fans who were nowhere to be found in the city of Denver, and all of a sudden everyone's a Warriors fan.
Right. But do you think? I guess it's inevitable that those people, they just bounce around from winter to winter.
I think so. But that's not my style. I root for four teams. Okay, I root for the Broncos. I root for the Nuggets. I root for the Rockies. I root for the Avalanche, and I hate everybody else.
Yeah.
Now, I root for some players here or there. I like to see certain players have certain levels of success. I'd love to see Russell Westbrook, as long as it doesn't come at the expense of the Nuggets, doing something without Durant. I think that would be just desserts. I would love to see that. I was rooting for the Cavaliers to beat the Warriors for all the reasons why I don't like those Warriors. So I root for certain players in certain situations. I'm rooting for Giannis Antetokounmpo because my grandmother, who lived till she was 103 and a half, and was a huge Bucks fan, so the Bucks always have a soft spot for me. But as far as hated teams, I'm with you. Red Sox hate them, Lakers hate them, Patriots hate them, and the usual list. Yeah, the usual list. Hate's a strong word though.
As I've
become a husband and a father, hate's become less of a factor in my life.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break because I want to get Andy's opinion on this team, and I want to preface it by talking about the golden eras. He has a theory about the golden eras of Denver Nuggets basketball. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Back here with Andrew Feinstein, the founder of DenverStiffs.com, and I want to ask you now about this team and get your perspective on it. You're a little bit more removed from the team than you have been in years past, but I want to start and preface it by saying, you have a theory about golden eras of Nuggets basketball, of which I believe you think there's been only two. Maybe you could say two full eras. Well, this is the third. No? Oh, there's been three before. All right, well, walk me through all three.
So when I was writing for Denver Stiffs, right around 08-09, when they went to the conference finals, I wrote that this is the third era of Nuggets basketball.
Okay.
So the first one is the late 70s. So the ABA Denver Nuggets become the NBA Denver Nuggets in 1976. Now, I was a year old, I don't really remember it. But the ABA Denver Nuggets were really good. The 74-75 Nuggets, the 75-76 Nuggets, these were 60-win teams. But they played against nine teams.
Yeah.
and the 75-76 Nuggets, two of the teams folded in the ABA. So, you know, we talk a lot about that was the greatest Nuggets team ever. You know, David Thompson, Dan Issel, Byron Beck, you know, these iconic names in Nuggets history. But really, the team that I think cemented that golden era was when they go into the NBA. 76-77, think about this. Their very first year in the NBA after being an ABA team, and they go to the Western Conference Finals. They go to the semifinals. They win 50 games and go to the semifinals, and they go to the conference finals the next season. So that's Larry Brown's the coach of that team. That's David Thompson, Dan Issel. That's the first true golden era. When you think about the Nuggets font, you think about Maxi Minor.
Yeah.
It comes from that. Okay, so that's era number one. Era number two, clearly, Doug Moe, 80s.
The entire decade, basically.
Alex English. Yeah. It wasn't just Alex English and Fat Lever. It was the Stiffs that played with it. Yeah, Joe Kopecky, Danny Shays, Blair Rasmussen, Bill Hanslick, T.R. Dunn, Mike Evans. I mean, they had a lot of Stiffs, right? So that was a great team. That was a great era. So that, to me, is golden era number two.
Okay.
And then we went into a dark winter. I mean, the 93-94 Nuggets, who upset the Sonics, should have been set up for a decade of success. But LaPhonso Ellis gets hurt. Dan Issel quits. Oh, Bernie Bickerstaff. Talk about hatred, okay? Yeah. Bernie Bickerstaff's in the Hall of Villains in Nuggets history. He literally torched our team to the ground. I mean, he literally said to Dikembe Mutombo, nah, we're not going to pay you a max salary.
Yeah.
Okay, Bernie, way to go. Bernie destroyed our team so badly that we literally don't make the playoffs for about a decade until Carmelo gets here. So that doesn't count as a golden era because even though we beat the Sonics, it was short-lived.
It's weird to think because that, I think, is the most iconic moment in Nuggets history. Mutombo, Game 5 falling on the floor. That's probably the single most, but not a golden era. And I agree with you.
And that's okay. You can have iconic moments that aren't golden eras,
right?
And then, of course, you know, again, give Carmelo credit, give George Karl credit. for the rekindling of the golden era of Nuggets basketball, and then Chauncey Billups kind of puts a cherry on the top of that in the latter part of the aughts. You know, that team made the playoffs, I believe, ten consecutive times.
Ten times.
And that's a golden era.
And that's across, that's both, I think seven of those or eight of those were with Melo. A couple of those post-Melo, but, sure. but still, it's, I count it as one.
And then as far as this team, let's just wait and see. You know, we still haven't made the playoffs yet. I think we will.
I'm going to ask you this in a second. So let's couch that for a second.
But this, I believe, is the start of one because Murray's young, Jokic is young, Barton's young, Harris is young. You know, so this team is set up to be, and Mike Malone, I'm a big Michael Malone fan.
Yeah.
So this team is set up to be, to have a golden era.
Yeah, I feel a lot more confident. I think this is way closer to either of the two. I don't, the 70s one, I really don't have a ton of frame of reference for, but either the 80s teams and the 2000s teams than it is to the 94 team. I think it would take an incredible amount of bad luck and or bad management for this team to not have a consistent run. They just have too many good players and good young players and too much of a good infrastructure in place to succeed. You don't
You're right on all fronts. And remember, this, weird things happen, okay?
Of course.
So the reason the 80s was sustainable is because that was an era when guys didn't bail on their teams after 3 or 4 years. They just didn't. Right. You kind of played for the team that you played for unless they traded you. I can't think of a single player in the 80s that demanded a trade. I just can't think of one. I'm sure there was one.
It was different.
But I can't think of a single one. The 90s, this physical structure of the NBA was really screwed up. You know, you had these three-year contracts for rookies, but then they could bail. And if you remember, all those guys bailed. Alonzo Mourning bailed on the Hornets, and Shaq bailed on the Magic, and McDyess was going to bail after we drafted.
So like, hard to build around three-year young players.
Yeah, everyone bailed, you know? Yeah. And so the Nuggets had ownership problems in the 90s. To your point, there was no stability. We didn't have Stan and Josh Kroenke.
Imagine Jamal Murray could leave Denver this summer without, you know, without restricting free or whatever.
So the 90s was like a lost decade, and the Nuggets succumbed to that. And then you get into the 00s, you know, this team, like that team, is set up for a long time success. Let's just not be foolish. And I hope Paul Millsap's not the second coming of Kenyon Martin from a contract standpoint.
Right.
And Kenyon Martin's contract killed us. And it's ironic because it was Kenyon Martin's performance that really was the engine of the team defensively in the late aughts, but he killed us. I mean, his contract and his injuries just killed that team from doing more in the 00s.
I feel like the league has learned slowly, but has learned from the history of the league, especially with contracts. Now, you still have John Wall and Andrew Wiggins, two, like, I would call untradeable contracts. You could maybe trade them for each other.
Nope, neither one of them.
But there's fewer and fewer of those. And I just feel like teams are a little bit more wise to the lessons they've had to learn along the way. What's your favorite of those golden eras?
You know the answer.
Personally, because of the 80s.
I grew up, the 80s is when I fell in love with basketball. I was very fortunate. My parents had season tickets, lower bowl, but higher up. And then my really good friend, Ryan Mordecai, I got to give a shout out to Ryan Mordecai. they were like my adopted family, and they've always had tickets the very first row behind the visitor's bench. Okay. So I still go to games, and I actually share tickets with them, and I share tickets with another couple behind them. That's where I sit. And I grew up sitting right behind the visitor's bench. And so I just fell in love with the game, and to have, again, Alex English, Fat Lever, Calvin Natt, Bill Hands, like I can just run off all the names, and then Doug Moe.
Yeah.
My parents' tickets, interestingly, were on the Nuggets bench side, and I learned every bad word I've ever learned. I learned from Doug Moe, and when I finally got to meet Doug Moe, I said, "Hey, I just want to let you know, I learned every bad word from you by going to games." And he said to me, "He's like, you wouldn't believe how many kids tell me that."
That's pretty hilarious. What did you think of the Doug Moe doc, by the way? The Altitude did you see it?
I did see it. It's already 2 years old now.
Yeah.
I don't remember all the specifics of it, but I thought Vic did a great job. And Vic Lombardi's another guy I should have mentioned, by the way. I mentioned the media guys always had the stiffs back. We love Vic Lombardi.
Vic's the best, man. Yeah. He just won the Broadcaster of the Year, and should have been a landslide.
He's awesome. We love Vic Lombardi. Vic, we love you.
What do you think of this team? What's your connection to the players on this team? I mean, is it, how different is it from some of the previous teams? Especially the 2000s, like if you compare this to the 2000s.
Well, the 2000s team, comparing this team is probably more comparable to the 80s than the 2000s. The 2000s team had a lot of ego.
Yeah.
And look, I was tough on George Karl at first. And I still think George Karl took, I love George, but I think George took a finals appearance and maybe three conference finals appearances and turn them into one conference finals appearance. I mean, he is the Andy Reid of the NBA at the end of the day.
A little bit.
But that team had a lot of arrogance, a lot of attitude, a lot of big personalities. I mean, Carmelo is not Carmelo's a tough customer. Iverson's a tough customer. Kenyon Martin, enough said. Marcus Camby's not exactly low maintenance. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of personality there to deal with. This team, to me, and I mean this as a positive, doesn't have that personality. And I think last night's game, when they were down 25, and if you just read Gary Harris's quotes after the game, these guys really love each other.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
I never got that sense from the OO Nuggets. I felt like the OO Nuggets will tolerate each other when we're on the floor. But I think the combination of these guys, this team, this era, being generally the same age and generally rooting. I mean, the way they all rooted for, is it Vanderbilt, the rookie,
that was so
getting
cool.
A point.
Really cool moment.
I mean, I just think that this team has had these kind of tender, cool moments that I just don't remember from the OO Nuggets.
Yeah. Is there a player you connect with more than the rest of them?
As a fan. On this Nuggets team, is there? Like, I'm trying to. Yeah, I always think about that. Like, who's my favorite Nuggets player?
Yeah, exactly.
Player
that's kind of what I'm asking. Basically.
On like this team at this moment,
Or some of them. It doesn't have to be.
No, fair enough. You know, I love Gary Harris and just his quiet professionalism of how he conducts himself. I love Will Barton.
Yeah,
I mean, he's such a. He's like a. I don't want to say a rich man's Corey Brewer, but he's like a Corey Brewer. You know, he doesn't. You can't pin exactly what he is or what he does.
Right.
You know, I just think that what he's done for himself and his career is terrific, and he's got a great attitude, and he's a super nice guy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I don't know Jokic at all, but I love
anyone does.
What I love about Jokic is he's flipping the script.
Yep.
You know, he's doing things. I mean, the guy gets triple-doubles in like 25 minutes of playing time. I love the fact that he's flipping the script. My critique of Jokic would be, because I do get to sit very close to the court, I just don't know how he does it. He doesn't look. I mean, he is. There's no definition on that body. I don't know how he does it. What he's doing, like I said, flipping the script and almost redefining what a passing center can look like is remarkable.
Where does he rank amongst all time Denver Nuggets complainers to referees?
Oh, gosh. there can't be anyone worse than Dale Ellis.
Okay.
Jeff Morton might be the only person that appreciates that joke, but I think Dale was the worst. You know what? That's another thing. The NBA should change that rule. I think in soccer, and don't quote me on this, but I believe in soccer, only the captain can talk to the referee. And the NBA needs to change that rule. I am so sick of watching these guys get paid $20 million a year screaming at the refs. And it's ridiculous. Like, did you watch the Celtics-Warriors game the other night when Marcus Smart clearly fouls Klay Thompson, like whacks him across the
arm?
That's
always the best.
And squeals like a little girl to the ref. I shouldn't say girl, sorry. Squeals like a baby to the referee that he didn't foul him when it was the most obvious foul of the game. I can't stand that. There should almost be like automatic ejections for that stuff to cut it out. Like enough already. Cut it out.
Yeah. I think Jokic has to be up there. It's the one thing, and it's funny, after the game the other day, he said, "You know, I've made improvements," and I remember thinking, like, yeah, we're going slow with this improvement. It's like a 20-year plan to wean yourself off complaining. All right, let's wrap this up, because one of the segments you used to do on Denver Stiffs, a very popular segment, the Stiff List, which every week you would come up with a new list of players, guys, situations, whatever, that you felt belonged on the Stiff List for the week. This is less of just a this week one, but it's sort of a... you know, recent Stiff List. Let's get started. You have a Stiff List prepared.
Well, we already talked about a few on the show, so we've spoiled it a little bit, but we'll work our way from the bottom up.
Okay.
So honorable mention is Dragan Bender. And you're probably thinking, you know, why Dragan Bender, you know?
Is he terrible?
He's terrible. He was, I believe he was the fourth overall pick just a couple seasons ago. He's a total bust, but I thought of a joke. Don't ever draft a guy named Bender with a top five pick, because Jonathan Bender, back in the 90s, early 00s, was a total bust at the fifth pick. So my joke is to you, Tim Connolly, don't draft anyone named Bender if you have a top five pick. So Dragan Bender's my honorable mention.
My first blog I ever started was called Fifth Pick in the Draft, because there's a lot of really bad fifth picks out there.
I think Marcus Fizer.
Well, Skeetisvili was...
Skeetisvili. By the way, Nicholas Skeetisvili. Can I tell my Nicholas Skeetisvili story?
Please.
So Nicholas Skeetisvili... I think we put him in the Denver Stiffs Hall of Fame, which, by the way, I'm bringing back this offseason. I will write the call.
Sweet.
Okay, you have my word.
Can't wait.
All right? Nicholas Skeetisvili, hands down, the all-time worst fifth pick. You can't top it. So I was living in Los Angeles when we had Skeetisvili, and this was the year that the Nuggets won 17 games under Jeff Buzdelic, which I will go on record as saying was the greatest coaching performance in Denver Nuggets history.
How many did they win?
17. How many times in NBA history can you say my team won 17 more games than it should have. No, I'm not kidding. Our starting backcourt, didn't make a roster the next season.
Yeah.
Okay. Oof. They had open tryouts. It was like the movie The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh.
That's right. Okay. So and it was outdoor, if I recall. They had a tryout that was in the parking lot of Pepsi Center.
So I'm in Los Angeles. Oh. I'm in Los Angeles. Master I get tickets to the Nuggets game, which in those days was an easy one to get because nobody wanted to see the Nuggets.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I'm a nerd, right? I go early. I want to watch warm-ups. So I went with a friend of mine who's a huge basketball fan, but he actually hates the Lakers. Mm. So we're in LA where we got good seats, and Skeeta in warm-ups makes every shot. Turnaround, jumpers, three-pointers. He's nailing every shot. You can see why Kiki Vandeweghe drafted
the next
him. Makes every shot. They bring him into the game. It's now an actual game. This is the game where Kobe had that 360, like, on Junior Harrington or one of the guys in the game. It was incredible with his iconic dunks. Skeetish Philly's wide open for, it wasn't quite a three-pointer, but it was a long jumper, and he hit the shot clock.
No way.
And that's when I knew. That's not hit the rim and then hit the shot clock.
There's no way.
He hit the shot clock.
Come on.
And that's when we knew he was a total bust. So anyway, we love you, Skeeta. By the way, Skeeta has a new job as one of the what are they called? The cheerleading squad for the Nuggets.
Oh,
he's out there every day. Nate Timmons, that one's for you. Okay, so Dragan Bender's honorable mention. Number five. We already talked about the Pelicans. They're on the stiff list, guys. You're going to lose a top five player this year. You're on the stiff list. Number four.
How would you grade? First of all, just give a letter grade to how the Pelicans have done around Anthony Davis.
C minus.
Really? That's higher than I would go.
Oh, okay.
I would go D.
Okay.
I would give a D.
Fine. We can argue over C minus versus D. The only reason I said C minus is they had a window where they were decent and they just couldn't stay healthy. He couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah, that's true.
He
that's
couldn't
true.
Stay healthy. Okay.
Number four.
Number four is a hybrid of the Timberwolves and Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah.
Do teams not learn their lessons? Do people not know
about the answer is no, they do
Bernie
not.
Bickerstaff, coach and GM, right. Incompetent. Dan Issel, who I love, Dan Issel, he's been nothing but nice to me, but you cannot have your coach and your GM be the same person unless you've actually won something.
Right.
You want to give that to Pat Riley? Fine. You want to give that to Greg Popovich? Fine. But other than those two, nobody has any business being the coach and the general manager. And what a disaster.
Especially him. I mean, he was an A-plus candidate for the disaster combo.
A-plus. I will tell you off the record. I'm sorry. I spoke with general managers around the NBA off the record. They loved when Thibodeau became GM. They just knew they had a sucker on the other end of the line.
Oh,
you know?
Man.
So anyway, Timberwolves and Thibodeau. Number three, Lakers, sans LeBron. What a terrible, terrible roster. I mean, just a bunch of losers.
The Phoenix Suns.
Well, yeah, the Phoenix Suns.
They're the Phoenix Suns with LeBron James. That's the only difference.
Yeah, that's a great line. Devin Booker, by the way. I mean, what does his future look like? Who the Nuggets passed on and took Moutier. Mm. Okay, number two. I hate to pick on him, but we have to. It's timely. Kyle Anderson.
Oh, this is timely.
I mean, I don't know what the hell happened last night. the end of the game. What was he thinking?
Yeah, well, he was thinking, I do not want to be here. What am I doing on the court with the ball? And the Nuggets were thinking, we should just let Kyle Anderson take a shot in this situation because what's he doing on the court?
And JB Bickerstaff, I mean, you know, does this guy know how to coach? I mean, he was 15-48 last year. He's 20-31 this year. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Going back to this Kyle Anderson thing, though, that was an all-time, I do not want this basketball right now. I mean, he was looking around. He looked at some of the fans. He looked at the coaches. He thought, what am I supposed to do?
I feel bad picking on him, but really, disaster last night. And then number one is Carmelo Anthony. I'm sorry. Your record speaks for itself, Melo. You were a loser. Hold on. You were a loser in New York. You were a loser in Oklahoma City. They are way better without you.
There's a loser in Houston for like 2 weeks.
And then you get to the Rockets and you torpedo the Rockets. By the way, who thought Mike D'Antoni and Carmelo would work this time?
Yeah, I know.
Time?
Oh, my God.
You're a loser in Houston. And
that's an all-timer.
They're playing really well since he's gone, and nobody wants him.
Yeah.
So, Carmelo Anthony, you're back where you belong, number one on the stiff list.
Bill Simmons has the Ewing theory.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Should it be named the Carmelo theory? Because Denver got better, or they won 57 games after he lost. I mean, you could make an argument everywhere
Carmelo
he went.
Is textbook Ewing theory. He textbook. Is textbook Ewing theory. And by the way, Adam, my friend, you deserve a lot of credit for your article about Bill Simmons. I met Bill Simmons when I lived in L.A., and he had just started out, and he lived in my neighborhood. And we bumped into each other at a deli that we used to both go to. And I told him I'd launched this website and I was calling for George Carl to be fired. And he said, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. And he actually linked to me back in the day.
That's cool.
So it was cool to see Bill Simmons give Denver Stiff some love. And you did a great job of taking the high road and rebutting him. And then he did a great job of taking the high road and retweeting it.
Yeah, that was fun. He was in on the joke, which is good, which is always nice. Well, Andy, I hope we make this somewhat a regular thing. The Big Stiff Summit. I don't know. We'll have to brand it somehow.
I like that. The Big Stiff Summit. And like I said, let's bring back the Denver Stiffs Hall of Fame. And then my friend Zach McAsh, Stiffy Awards. You did them in 2017. We handed off the mantle. I don't think I saw them in 2018. So let's bring them back in 2019.
Man, you know, I didn't even think about it until now. Okay. I can't remember if he has them. Yeah, he did a great job with
that. Gotta bring back the Stiffy Awards.
Yeah, the Stiffy Awards are always great.
Who will be the Stiff of the Year in 2018, 2019? Start thinking about it.
Yeah, I wonder who the leading candidates are at the moment. We'll have to take a look. Andy, thanks for coming on. Everybody else, thanks for tuning in. We will be back again tomorrow with a brand new episode, and it will be a recap episode of hopefully a win over the New Orleans Pelicans. We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.